education and recreational programs and activities. The resulting small grant program fund was subdivided into two grant fund programs, the Intervention Outreach Services Grant and the Summer Activities for Youth in Portland Grant. Grant money is awarded through a request for proposal were made available to seven grantee organizations in June of 2007. I'm going to reflect on a report that's before you. It's a report to council. The report to council document you have before you defines the Office of Youth Violence Prevention small grant program status in depth. Section 1 is a comparative analysis of data from the Portland Police Bureau, Oregon Department of Education, Portland School Foundation, and data collected from grantee organizations, helping to define appropriate grant fund service to high-risk youth populations. Section 2 displays the individual grantee organizations, youth client population that was served through their organizations. And Section 3 displays the individual grantee organization expenditures and program descriptions. To allow time for grant providers to speak to you today, the following slides will be offered briefly to cover the details of the small grant program progress, which again can be studied in more detail with the previous mentioned report, which I have in my hand. This report will be made available in PDF format on portlandonline.com. The Summer Activities Grant for Youth in Portland was to provide educational and recreational activities to at-risk youth to the age of 21 in North and Northeast Portland. It was recognized prior to the grant that there was a large number of youth lacking employment opportunities and access to education and recreational activities. This fund serves to address the every year overriding concern regarding increasing youth-related violent crime during the late spring and summer months. The Intervention Outreach Services Grant Fund. The purpose of the Intervention Outreach Service Grant Fund is to provide intervention, outreach, prevention, counseling, educational services to at-risk youth up to the age of 25 and their families, and recreation activities to at-risk youth to the age of 21 in North and Northeast Portland. The need for current city funding is due to the reduction since the spring of 2006 in existing funding for outreach service programs and caused by reduced funding again and severe reduction in staff. The following slide shows the expenditures for the grant fund to date. At this time, $172,000 has been totally expended, and you can see the breakdowns in personnel, material services, and administrative costs for all grantees combined. The next slide is the youth and family population. This slide it's broken down by ethnicity and gender and shows for the total grouping of grantees. The next slide is the area of the city in which the grantees serve their clients at the percentages. The next slide is the ages that were served. Along with the ages, you can see the school designation. The next slide is the school districts that were served at the percentages for grantee clients. Following slide is the referral population slide. As you can see, 2105 youth were contacted. 1981 had referral information given to them, and 1171 were involved in programming. As you can see below that, family members were also included. These were connected family members to the youth clients. Of the youth that were given referral information, the referral information was broken down by percentage. Of the referral information offered to families, the total was broken down into percentages into category. The organizations that were funded under the outreach intervention grant were under agreement to be involved in the gang violence task force and offered service to the gang violence task force in addition to their client bases. And we have the three commanders of the police precincts here to talk about that relationship. The following is the elements of a successful crime violence prevention program, and this is from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and it specifically says that that targets are to be specific, that the programs are to offer a life experience and to build individual skills and competency, to include parent effectiveness training, and to encourage changes in the type and level of involvement in peer groups. And our grantee organizations are here to speak today about what they've been able to accomplish under this standard. Based on this standard, we have come to the opinion that this program has been successful to date. Thank you.
Any questions to this point, gentlemen?
I have a few, if that's all right.
Please.
So, in terms of the numbers of reported shootings and gang-related incidents, did I miss that graph in here somewhere?
There is no graph regarding shootings, related shootings.
So we do have the three precinct commanders that can talk to that, though.
Okay. It would be useful for me in terms of the report is to have that in it to know if our efforts are producing results. What are the trends related to gang-related activities, shootings, or whatever other factor you want to highlight?
Certainly. And it's important to note that this report goes up to December, and a lot of that information is actually up to yesterday, if you will, the most current information. So we'll be sure to have that for you the next time.
Are trends up or down or flat, or what are they?
February, I believe, was up. Yep. But we can leave the commanders, and they can tell you specifically. Okay. But from what I know, February was up.
And then I just pulled up your notes online here, and there's a lot of identification and discussion of Skate World.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Which is in Gresham, right?
Yes. Yes.
Right. So, or maybe the police are best handled to talk about our partnership with Gresham.
Certainly.
Police Department, or do you have, what kind of partnerships at your level, the non-police level, do you have in Gresham? How's that going?
It's actually ties into my next step, so I'll read the first bullet point. One of our biggest next steps, and it's in progress now, is to build a City of Portland, Multnomah County, City of Gresham partnership for support, jurisdiction, and sustainability. And to this point, all the agencies have agreed on that partnership. In regards to Skate World specifically, there's a gentleman by the name of Pastor Weisner who was going to be here today. We got called out on another work, who's a consultant for Skate World, to provide safety services for them. We've also met with the Gang Violence Task Force, East Precinct officers, to create a collaborative effort so that everyone's not running with a different agenda and or protocol. So, other next steps to be, we are currently building a policy oversight as well as an advisory committee to help guide the direction of the office into the coming years. So one committee will deal specifically with policy. The other will deal specifically with programming. We're busy establishing a more inclusive, more coordinated model of service providers who cooperate, grow, and serve together. In doing so, we will provide better services and more safety for the Portland metro area. Lastly, we will research best practices and other metropolitan areas around the country to partner with them for strength and effectiveness.
Notes that I've seen a couple times on your meeting notes, which I really appreciate, they're very useful. It talks about community is missing when describing the problem and not represented enough. What, talk to me more about.
I couldn't hear your full question.
I'm sorry. It says a couple of places noting the frustration of some of the people who attend your meetings about potentially not having enough sort of community involvement in this. Can you comment on that?
Well, the biggest factor that we've come across is that the meetings are held at 10 o'clock a.m. every other Friday. And for folks that are working, that's been a huge barrier. So one of the conversations we've started is, how can we reach the community? Do we need to create an evening meeting? One of the things that the commanders will speak to is that we're alternating meetings between Northeast Precinct and East Precinct. And then the other question will be, how can we involve the citizens who just can't take a day off of work in the middle of the day for a meeting such as that? So, and that actually came directly from a citizen.
Thank
you. The city council last year funded some expanded outreach, or I'm sorry, some expanded activities for teens. In fact, I think the idea grew out of some ride-alongs with Lieutenant Jackson, where we have activities going later in community centers and elsewhere. And I'm just wondering, are you plugged into that with the Parks Bureau in terms of what they're doing and those activities can then mesh with what you're doing?
I met with Mr. Warrington and Mrs. Harper just last week to run over a list. Right now we're dealing one step at a time, so we've gotten spring break and the beginning of summer hashed out, and we're creating the long-term partnership now so that we're privy to what everyone else is working on.
And I think that's really important to have evening activities for the young people. That keeps them off the street and involved.
Yeah, I think Mr. Warrington is somewhere behind me.
So. He's here.
He's here? Right.
Warrington.
Any other questions? So next up we'll have our grantee organizations.
Okay. Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and if you have an assigned order of speaking, that's fine. Otherwise, just someone go ahead and start.
Okay, my name is Ruma Perez, and I'm Program Director for the Latino Network.
My name is Lily Martinez, and I'm a youth that went to Latino Network.
Good morning, Council Members and Mayor Tom Potter. My name is Cynthia Gomez, and I'm here on behalf of the Latino Network. We received city dollars and are here to tell you how our kids, families, and communities benefited from our programs. With these dollars, we were able to expand our programs to reach more high-risk and adjudicated Latino youth. Our program served 41 Latino youth, and of these, a third were special education students. 70% were adjudicated youth. 97% successfully completed the summer academy, and 95% of these youth are currently enrolled in school. 50% have received 0.5 credit hours from their schools for their involvement in the summer program. We had 17 community partnerships and exposed youth to over 65 adult volunteers. 40% of these volunteers worked an average of 6 hours per week with these youth as role models, mentors, instructors, and tutors. Our youth soccer team won second place in the DRL League of the Oregon Youth Soccer Association. We're provided with 6 hours of pro-social activities per week and volunteered in their communities to plant trees and clean up their neighborhoods.
Hello, my name is Lily Martinez, and I want to read something that I wrote to you, something that I wrote while in Latino Network Youth Summer Program. It has been going very well. It is keeping me out of trouble. I'm learning lots of things I did not know before, and I got to make new friends and got to meet new people. I got to know that things I thought were good are sometimes bad, and I'm telling my little brothers and the good things and the bad. It has been helping me to appreciate my family and choosing my friends, and it's helping me stay out of the streets and out of drugs.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Lily, especially.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of the City Council. Thank you for this opportunity to quickly tell you about our program. I'm Rebecca Black, the Executive Director of Oregon Outreach Incorporated. We're celebrating our 20th year working with young people in the greater Portland metro area, and our program provides accredited academic programs and other services to young people who are at risk of dropping out of school or who have already dropped out of school. We were the fortunate recipients of one of the $25,000 summer grants this summer, and we were able to offer a very comprehensive summer program to our young people. We connected with the high schools in North and Northeast Portland. They identified young people who they believed were at risk of not returning to school in the fall of 2007, referred them to our program, and our program offered academic instruction where those students could earn credit and catch up. We offered recreational opportunities. We offered counseling with our partners, House of Emoja, who did violence prevention, conflict resolution, anger management, LifeWorks Northwest, who offered drug and alcohol intervention, education, and prevention. And We also did job training and job placement through Urban Opportunities and through our program this summer. So it was a very comprehensive program, and we had some wonderful partners in the community, Brothers and Sisters Keepers, as I mentioned, House of Emoja and LifeWorks. 95% of those students who were at risk of not returning to school returned to their schools in the fall. And even though the summer program ran from the week after the regular school year ended and ended right before school started, we had 95% attendance, which I think is amazing given these were kids who were disillusioned with school when they came into the program. One of the things your dollars did was create a leverage. With the base funding of $25,000, we had other community partners step up to the plate and help us. Some of those were the Meyer Foundation, Templeton Foundation, Portland Schools Foundation, Northwest Natural Gas. Once they saw the commitment from the city, they also stepped up to the plate and helped us do some more outreach with families and with our students. One of the really, I think, wonderful benefits of the program was we were funded for the summer, which was basically a two-month program. Those students who attended our program have stayed in touch with their counselors, with their teachers, and to date are still in school and are receiving encouragement and support from the people they connected with this summer. So your $25,000, I believe, has funded a year-round effort that has really made a difference in the lives of those students that attended the program. So thank all of you for your support, and that thanks comes from our students and their families and our staff and our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and anybody can begin.
Good morning. Tanya Deakins, Brothers and Sisters Keepers, Inc. Thank you for having us this morning, and I'll let you introduce yourselves. Go ahead.
You know what?
Yes.
My name is Alanda. I just came here to speak on the behalf of last year, 07, July. I suffered multiple gunshot wounds. One went through the face, right here in my lower jaw, and hit my larynx and entered through the lower left side of my back and came out the right side of my stomach. And without them around, I had some restitution to pay off. Otherwise, the private insurance company that paid off $277,000 wouldn't have paid it off if she or the outreach program didn't help me pay off the restitution. So as far as that goes, I mean, with them around, it was a lot of help for me to make it through that whole situation.
Thank you for coming in and talking.
Really quick, just to give you a little insight about Brothers and Sisters Keepers, when we received the grant, $62,000, from the mayor's office, first-time recipient of any grant. We had just got started in our incorporation, been doing this work for 15 years, left Youth Gangs program after 14 years, and started our own gang outreach program to keep the hope and the vision alive of what we do and with our young people. And I think Alander's being very modest here. He's gone through a lot. And the thing is working with these young people out here, we have the relationship. It wasn't us that got the money. It was us in our partnership with the community to help build that and work with his parole and probation officer and to be able to tie those things in with the state of Oregon, with the crime victim, and the different things that we had to do together, but we couldn't do it without working with him and his family. And then also he has other siblings also. So you tie a lot of things in together. So when we work with our young people, it's not just them, it's their family. You can't work with a young person without working with his family. And it's the support and the collaboration of all. Again, we always model ourselves out after the three-legged stool: law enforcement, parole and probation, community outreach. And if we pull a leg away, the stool's gonna fall. So we couldn't do it without working together. So it wasn't just us as outreach, even though I thank you for that. But it was the collaboration of everyone working together, and that just shows the work that we do as outreach. It is not limited just at gang, but it's also mentoring, it's also working in the community, it's also working with healthcare and just different things that we have to do to make a complete young person, and to do the prevention and do the intervention as well, and then be there also as a supportive mentoring. So then I have one other person here, which is a parent that we brought also. So.
Hi, my name is Lisa Holt, and my children have been involved with Tanya and her program for many, many years. And She just, the things that she's done for my children have helped them to be involved in things that they probably wouldn't have been involved in, like, you know, the activities I'm talking about. And, you know, she helps not only the children but the families. I've seen it myself over the years. And my oldest daughter is in her group program right now. She has twins, and Tanya helps her out with her meetings and stuff and helps her to, you know, become a better parent and things like that. So we've been with Tanya a long time. She's helped our family a lot, and her program is really, you know, a great thing.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you, Tanya.
Good morning, Mayor Tomer, Tom Potter, and council members. My name is Cuauhtemoc Bautista, and I work for El Programa Hispano, Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities has been in the community working for Portland and the Monoma County for 25 years, and I'm gladly very fortunate to be working with them, and also acknowledging that through their in-house agencies and support groups, I've been providing wraparound services for our clients and their parents. So through this, I've benefited to meet a lot of parents and gone out of my way to extend myself to go to the schools, also the communities, and provided several presentations and groups for our youth and empowered them, you know, better understanding of our need of focusing in education. This has allowed us to elaborate and expand ourselves in recreation, athletics, and arts to have them focus on other things rather than some of the negativity that's out there in our community. I want to apologize for I had a parent and one of their sons here today, but they couldn't make it for whatever reason. And so I just want to allow you to know that they're deeply sorry that they couldn't make it, but we encourage them to be here on our next meeting. And so thank you for giving us the opportunity to continue working in this field of work. We're working with three academic support specialists, and also four gang case managers that do intensive case management for our youth. So that's allowed me to expand myself and do surveys throughout the city from East County to Northeast and North Portland. And through the collaboration of the police department and also other resources and communities, community-based organizations, we've encountered these tasks, and we continue to do so. So thank you again for allowing us to be here and continue to doing our efforts in this field of work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor. I'm Robert Richardson, Emmanuel Community General Services and Council. Appreciate the time to be here to all the council members. Come this morning in short brief to highlight the efforts that we really feel that were very necessary at the time. Just a brief history of Emmanuel Community General Services. We date back to when the first notoriety gang killing was done in the city, out then at the Columbia Villa. Since that time to this present time, August of 88 would certainly be the 20-year reign that we've had a coalition of working with city and county and state. Certainly, the vast majority of our youth have been adjudicated in one way or another that we've had some influence to work with that family. Our motto has been that we will not see through families, but we'll see families and youth through. Certainly to my left and to my right are two people that I want to address this council. And I want to say before they do speak that This has probably have been some of the best spent money that I've ever been adorned with. Twofold: one, that the fact that it became at a time that was very critical. We have been in the business for quite some time, and for the first time, there was really the lights were blinking very dimly at ECS. Our staffing capacity, our funding basis, it pretty much had dried up to a sense that we were faculty down to one outreach worker and three other staff that were doing other things in regards to family services and drug and alcohol. We currently have a going home house, which is funded by DOC. But I want to say without any delay in my makeup, the fact that this has been a very, very faithful and needed process. I would like if the other gentleman would introduce himself.
Good morning, Mayor, Councilman. My name is Carl Rucker. I'm an outreach worker. I believe that, you know, our presence on the street does a lot of good. I mean, I've also worked for Portland Parks and Recreation and Peninsula Park over the last 5 years, and also University Park, and then with ECS. The presence and the relationships that I've gained with the youngsters, it definitely is a plus, because without someone always in their ear, you know what I mean, because the one thing we understand is that they are kids, and to have someone in their ear and to spend some time with them and try to understand why it is, you know, that maybe they hang out as much as they do. And sometimes when we spend time with them, we learn the reasons why. But I think that our presence out there, and I know we make a difference as outreach workers. And I just appreciate the chance to get to work with them, because at the same time, I know that if there's no one out there for them, they will continue to do what they do.
Good morning. My name is Jonas Noel. On behalf of the youth, I can say that there are very good, basically, they're very positive thing out there, because simple fact, as a young teen, I used to run through Peninsula Park. Like, when I was having trouble, I could always look back to go to Face, you know, because he ran most of the parks. And they did a lot of positive things, like keeping, you know, people that, you know, was getting into trouble out the park, or helping them out, giving them help that they need. And you could always look at them as somebody to go to and talk to whenever you needed help or whatever the problem was. And I just think it's a very good program, because simple fact that there's somebody to go to whenever you need help.
Thank you.
I would just like to close in saying, Mayor, and to the council, we've come to realize that a boy cannot become a man until he's held to one's hand. We also realize that you can give and not love, but you can't love and not give. When we came and started this situation with Bishop A.A. Wells, we decided we would do more than have church. We would get outside the walls. From that time to this present time, that passion and that desire to change the life of young people, make them productive, make them make a contribution to the city and the state that they live in, and feel proud of that, the efforts of education and strengthening themselves as well as their families. Again, we thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you for what you folks do.
Morning, council members and Mayor Potter. My name is Mac Yim, and I run the IOSP out of Urko Asian Family Center. But instead of me telling you about how much the program has helped, I'd rather you hear from someone who has benefited from the program. Vincent Vang.
My name is Vincent Vang, and on behalf of you, not long ago, my grandfather passed away of a heart attack, and my mother and my stepfather divorced. And my real father has never really been part of my life. Life was horrible, not having a father, and the man I always looked up to, my grandfather, wasn't there anymore. Since then, I broke down, arguing and fighting at school. I didn't care what happened to me. I felt like there was no purpose in life. Then I met this man named Mac. He went through the same things I went through, and when I heard his story, I thought that I was the only one in the world who had this kind of pain. Thanks to him, I made things right in my family. He told me that the past is the past, and you just need to learn from your own mistakes. He helped me with what I wanted, and what I wanted was to be a better person, a better son, a better grandson, better nephew, and a better role model to all my little cousins. Not only did he just help me, he helped other people with bigger problems than I do. We do a lot of activities such as like snowboarding, and I meet other kids who have the same problems as I do, and I ask them, and they say that Mac helped them too. My mother is thinking about moving to Hillsboro, and if I can't be a part of this community, this program anymore, I hope that there's other programs like this in Hillsboro.
Thank you.
Nice job, Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Potter and City Council members. My name is Corey Matthew, and I'm Salish, Blackfeet, and Cree. I'm a proud member of the Portland Native community, home to 38,000 Native Americans, a parent of a sophomore in high school, and I serve professionally as the Youth Services Director at the Native American Youth and Family Center. When we talk about gangs and gang involvement, often certain pictures and images come to our mind. Many people in Portland are not aware of the very serious gang issues impacting the Native community and the unique challenges they present. Native Americans are members of Native Pacific gangs such as the Red Ribbons and the Blue Ribbons that exist within the city, and members predominantly Latino gangs located in their neighborhoods. Our NAIA Early College Academy is diverse because we have over 90 tribes represented, but we also have every gang in the city represented as well. I share this with you today to emphasize the importance of culturally specific services in our population. Our challenges are complex and ever-changing, and it is to be complimented that the City of Portland is investing in providers that have the strongest relationship and knowledge about their own community. With resources provided by the City of Portland, NAIA Family Center was able to leverage an additional $1,000 or $100,000 in county resources and foundation funding, create a comprehensive program addressing the safety, academic, and cultural and identity development needs for over 100 young people. These youth are not on the streets, they are not in the juvenile justice system, and they are not engaging in crime. They are in school feeling part of the larger Native community, learning about their history as a young Native leader rather than a gang member, and finding jobs and internships during the summer. This is impressive for a $60,000 investment made by the City of Portland. We wish we could serve more young people. We still have many challenges and much work to do. There are more youth that would like to be served, but we do not have staff, time, or resources to accommodate, and we have raising incident of female gang involvement and violence that needs to be addressed. I appreciate your investment thus far and hope you will continue to see this as a critical prevention and intervention services, making the City of Portland better for all citizens. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Glenn Lamont. My nation is the Niowa Okla, people of the Mother Mound, Choctaw Nation. I'm also Creole, and my mother's from Isle of Man. I'm the gang prevention coordinator over there at NAIA Family Center. There is three particular issues pertaining to Native kids and gangs. That's assimilation into society, loss of culture, and loss of family. With what we provide is a safe environment for all youth, not just Native Americans. For culture, for loss of culture, we as Native people, we identify with that. We identify with our language, our heritage, and our spirituality. And the loss of family, because of that, they're more or less likely to go into a gang and provide, the gang provides the new role models. With us, we provide the positive role models. Because of the culture, which adapts to everything, we internally produce a more self-efficient youth, one that is proud of who they are, where they are going in life, and become a more productive citizen.
Thank you, folks. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. My name is Jim Ferraris. I'm the commander of Northeast Precinct. I've been there about a month now, and prior to that, I was the commander of North Precinct. And it's no secret that in Northeast Precinct, we have a problem with youth violence. You've heard from a number of folks today about issues citywide and services being provided citywide that help curtail youth violence and prevent that. But we're here to talk about youth violence in its own nature. In the last month that I've been at Northeast, even the last 2 weeks, we've had six shootings, and two of which were last night. Most of them are gang-related. We had a riot and fight at Benson High School at the Benson-Grant game about a month ago that I think most of you are familiar with, and we've got about a dozen young men who are facing charges on some pretty serious criminal violations, most of whom live in Northeast Precinct. So we have an issue, and there's a solution that we think is working, and that's to provide these services and outreach to our youth to help curtail and prevent these acts from occurring. A little bit of history with my involvement with the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. When I was at North Precinct, I worked very closely with John Kanda when he was the director to build a comprehensive public safety plan at the New Columbia neighborhood. That office was instrumental in providing services and helping to build partnerships that needed to make New Columbia safer. Those services were enhanced when Harry Jackson came on board as a public safety coordinator at New Columbia. Many of the Office of Youth Violence Prevention small grant recipients were also heavily involved in providing services for youth and families in New Columbia that helped the safety and security of the citizens there. Now in my role as a commander of Northeast Precinct, I co-chair the Gang Violence Task Force. I've invited the office's director, Rob Ingram, to join me as a co-chair. I've also invited Commander Mike Krebs at the end of the table here to join me from East Precinct as a co-chair. The final piece of leadership for that group is to find a community member to serve with us as a co-chair. And we've asked the group to give us ideas and input as to who might be an appropriate community member to help us lead that group. The Gang Violence Task Force is functioning as a forum for community members, for officers, outreach workers, and service providers to communicate and collaborate toward youth violence prevention. But the fact remains that we need more community involvement. I think most of you are familiar or have been at the meetings. Mayor, I know you've been at the meetings. And we've got a lot of government people around the table, but we need the community involved. We need more community involvement to make this thing work. One of the ideas that I've spoken to Commander Krebs and Mr. Ingram about is to move the meeting or alternate the meetings between Northeast Precinct and East Precinct. So our next meeting, this coming Friday, will be out at East Precinct, and we'll alternate between Northeast Portland and East Precinct. Thank you.
I'm Mike Krebs, the commander of East Precinct, and as you know, the gangs are moving eastbound. Just last week, we had two severe gang beatings and at least one gang shooting where a 14-year-old boy was shot. So the gangs are moving east, and it's nice that Rob contacted me and Commander Ferris about moving the meetings out every other week or every other time out to East Precinct. We had our first meeting, it's been about a month ago, out at East Precinct, and it was well attended. It was a good thing. You mentioned Gresham Police Department. They were out there. I think by moving it out there, we'll start getting the East County, some of the cities out there getting involved. So I think it's a good move to move it eastbound. I want to give you some, I've been dealing with, last summer there's going to be a gang fight and a lot of stuff problems happening at 162nd Avenue Max Platform. I called upon the youth violence prevention program, and they rallied up the troops, got them out there, and helped us suppress some of the problems on 162nd. So they responded quickly, they were able to have the resource, they knew who to contact, and it happened very quickly and able to suppress the problem. We also had information there was going to be a large concert out on the east side. Once again, I contacted the program, they rallied up the troops, they got them out there. It was amazing on how they were able to bring everyone together, they knew exactly who to call, and it was a very successful event. So I think money's well spent with this program. I've been very pleased. Harry Jackson is now stationed at East Precinct. When I saw Harry out that way, I said, Harry, I've got a desk and a computer for you. And so we brought him out there. I was very pleased with that. Also, with the mentioned Gresham, Commissioner Adams, and we are working closely with Tim Gerkman and the chief out there to work with Skate World. One of the biggest problems with Skate World is they have their gang problems and they get on the MAX platform, the MAX, and they head back west. And they've been communicating with us on how to solve that problem. So we are moving forward and working closely with Gresham to help solve the gang problem because it goes both ways. They don't know the boundaries, so we are working with them. I know that was a concern of yours. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Dave Benson. I'm the commander of the Tactical Operations Division. Part of Tactical Operations is the Gang Enforce Team, and the Gang Enforcement Team has and will continue to work with the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. It is really important that we share information with the Gang Violence Task Force, and it's a collaborative effort. Information flows back and forth, and it has been a good, productive one means of communication. Commissioner Adams, you asked about the whole issue of gang shootings. Gang shootings, just the way we code and collect data, is a little hard to track. But what is easier to track and what we can get our arms around is the number of shootings in the city and then the number of times our gang violence response team goes out to a shooting. The gang violence response team is a group of investigators from tactical operations. And when officers are on the scene of typically a shooting, but any kind of violent act where they sense, believe, through a variety of factors, that there's gang involvement, they call the gang violence response team. In 2006, they were called 31 times. In 2007, they were called 40 times, an increase of about 23%. During the period of December 1 through last night, we're at 15 call-outs for the gang violence response team, which is at summer levels. Typically, we would see this level in the warm summer months. So I would say that gang violence is on the rise in the city of Portland. It is on the rise in the region, and certainly nationally. We hear from our partners around the nation that gang violence is seeing a resurgence throughout the country.
So, Dave, what is the nature of the calls that you're getting?
The nature of the calls we're getting primarily are shooting calls.
These 15 that you're talking about since December?
Yeah, they're almost exclusively gunfire, handguns specifically. It's not exclusive, but just about.
If I could chime in for just a moment, last night, Commissioner, the two that we had, one in the 3800 block of Northeast 6th Avenue, was a house that was shot up. There were people inside, a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old were inside. Luckily, they were not hurt. And the second one that happened about 6:30 yesterday evening in the 6400 block of North Albina near Peninsular Park, the shooting originated in the park, and a coffee shop nearby had bullets fly into it, and a cleaning lady happened to be inside, and luckily she wasn't hurt. So those are typically the types of shootings that we're seeing. They're random, and they're into homes, they're in parks, and there's collateral damage by bullets flying and landing in adjacent businesses and residences.
And why do we conclude that's necessarily propagated by a gang as opposed to some other?
Statements by witnesses. If we arrest a suspect, statement by suspect, they'll say it's a rival gang member. There'll be a lot of witnesses will say they were exchanging gang signs, or there's a lot of evidence that we collect pretty quickly that leads us to that conclusion.
Thanks.
So our officers will make an initial assessment when they arrive on scene and whether they're from northeast or east. And once they collect that information, then they'll call Dave's people out.
Right.
And when we've been called out of those 40 times last year we have been called out, we've never gone to a scene where we've subsequently discovered it wasn't gang-related. Okay. The initial responding officers do a real good job of triaging those calls.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So in your professional estimations, why is it on the rise? Why is gang violence on the rise?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we have those discussions, and there's a lot of factors. There were a lot of what we call old school gangsters that have been in the correctional system, have now been getting out, and while they're not committing acts of violence, they are recruiting others, youngsters, to commit acts of violence. There's just a whole variety of factors, and it's difficult to put our finger on one single factor.
either.
One thing I'd like to add is that I've been noticing the, you know, I was in the gang enforcement team in the early 90s. I know the gang started out here in the 80s, but I'm starting to see some of the children of the old gang members that are now becoming involved in gangs. I see them at, you'll see the junior on the end of their name and find out, hey, I arrested that guy back in, you know, in 93 or 4, and now we're finding some of their children are actually turned to the gang life. Kind of like with me, my father was a police officer, so I became a police officer, and many of the gang members, they had some children early on, and now these kids are starting to live that gang lifestyle. I don't know, I'm sure that Jim and David's seen that also. I'm seeing these names that keep coming up. One important thing, I think, we talk about shooting going up and is violence going up, but it appears that it is. But we also have to keep in mind, too, that, and I heard some of the grantees come up here, and some touching those individual lives. Some of these kids may not necessarily be shooters or victims of shots fired and stuff like that, but the youth gang outreach people are really touching some of these kids' life to get them on track, to get them into school. And I think it's important that we don't lose sight of that. It may not be, shootings may not drop, but we are touching individual lives of these kids to get their life on track. And these outreach workers are actually doing that, taking them under their wings and making a better life for those people. And if we save one or two, I mean, it seems small, but if we can change a few people's lives, it's huge. So I would recommend that you continue on with this program, because I was a great instructor teaching gang resistance education and training to keep kids out of gangs. And you'll see, you'll see a kid 5, 6, 7 years later and find out that he did make some good decisions just on one person taking someone under the wing. Mm-hmm. And just because gangs going up doesn't mean they're not doing their job. It means that, you know, it is going up, but I think individual lives are almost more important than the bigger view sometimes.
I'm curious about the weapons involved. When I was in the legislature, I worked on the gun show legislation, mm-hmm. and I remember at the time that mm-hmm. it seemed like a lot of weapons were coming from gun shows, that people realized they could go there and buy weapons and not have background checks and all that. Are you able to generalize as to where the weapons involved come from, or is it?
There's a lot of places there are straw purchases going on that when we hear about them, we investigate. That is, a gang member would send a relative or a girlfriend into a gun store or the gun show to buy a gun on their behalf and then hand it off to them. And when we find out about those things, we investigate. There are just a lot of guns out there.
Right.
I mean, bottom line. And they buy them through gun shows, gun stores. They'll buy them on the street. What I can tell you is, in my police career, when I got hired, we found when we had a suspect with guns, they had bad guns and bad ammo. And now what we're seeing is suspects with very, very good guns and good ammo. And we've seen that trend over the last probably decade, and now more today than ever.
Do you ever trace it back to improper sales in terms of what the law is by a dealer or a gun store or a gun show? You do?
We do.
And then what is the severest thing that can happen, and what is generally what actually happens when you do that?
Well, we have one, and next week will be two ATF agents assigned to my office, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms agent, and that is one of their primary responsibilities, is to track gun purchases, where the guns come from, and then when we have a gun, we'll enter it in a database, and we'll trace it all the way back to its manufacturer's origin, and then trace it all the way through. And we'll try to find if we have individuals that are selling guns illegally, they can certainly be charged with a felony if they're illegal providing firearms.
I guess what I'm asking is, are we taking a no-tolerance approach?
Absolutely.
And do we do the maximum, including being creative, using some of our maybe local ordinances to close the business down, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying, and I can tell you the gun dealers – by far and away are pretty reputable,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to do the right thing. The most recent case involving a gang member that I'm aware of 3 weeks ago now was a straw purchase where it was an alert gun dealer that called us. And so I think by and large they're trying to do the right thing, and they know that they can at a minimum lose their license to deal firearms.
So when you catch somebody that's buying a gun for somebody else, again, I guess I'm trying to figure out a way we can send a message to the suppliers, whether it's a straw purchaser or whoever, do we t- take the severest?
Yes. We take any and all action we can when we catch an ex-con, a convict that's in possession of a firearm. I know the United States Attorney's Office takes a good hard look at each and every one of those cases to see if they're eligible for federal prosecution. There's no tolerance across the board in both Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, U.S. Attorney's Office, and I know the adjoining counties' DAs have much the same approach.
So you're confident we're doing everything and being as harsh as we can on
We're trying, yeah. Yes, and everybody's doing the best they can.
Okay, thanks.
I think, Commissioner, the guns are just out there. Like you said, burglaries, thefts, car prowls, I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're difficult to get them off the street.
The last number I heard that there were 200 million guns.
I've heard that before, too.
I think the number's closer to 260 million guns.
260 million.
It's a lot of guns.
Hopefully that's nationwide, right?
That's nationwide.
Yeah. Just in Florida.
I have a couple of sort of lightning round questions, if you would. Curfew. I noticed that there's a fair amount of discussion in the group on curfew, curfew violations. Is that something you view as a useful tool?
Absolutely. In fact, with spring break, we're beginning planning for spring break, and one of those elements of that will be running curfew missions in our precincts to address youth who are out when they shouldn't be out, and when they're out and they're unsupervised, they get into trouble.
What do you do with curfew violators?
We work with the juvenile department and with NAFI, and or we take them to our precinct and get in touch with a they either go to a caseworker or we get in touch with the parents or a guardian and have them come pick them up, and then there's a referral to the juvenile department.
NAFI, Jim?
Yes. Mayor. New Avenues for Youth.
And the perception of fear and the reality of some of the criminal activity on light rail max, how is that going?
You know, I'm pretty involved in that. I think it's getting better. I think all the agencies have, particularly TriMet, has put a lot of effort into increasing the visibility of not only their whack and hut, but their employees. There's Victory Outreach is similar to the rider advocates. They're trying to get them on the east side. I know that TriMet's also looking to develop an East Precinct, I guess an extension of the TriMet division, to put approximately 8 officers going from Gateway to the end of the system. Most of the problem seems to be on the east side of town. And so TriMet, they've stepped up to the plate. Fred Hansen's listened. He's had some listening sessions, and he's trying to make some changes to make things feel safer. They've also having whack and hut ride on the back train of each of the max cars, and not all hours, but during the peak hours where there might be problems in the evening, they're trying to put a whack and hut person on the back of each of those trains. So,
and go ahead.
Other hotspot that's been in the news, Columbia Villa. How are things there now?
New Columbia, I can tell you that from my time at North Precinct that things have been very calm there. There was a shooting there towards the end of the year, I believe, 1st of January, where a person was hit, and that was the first actual person shot at New Columbia. There had been bits of violence, but things have calmed down considerably there, and largely because of the outreach services that are funded by the programs from the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. We had a tremendous amount of services coordinated through New Columbia, both from the Housing Authority, from the Police Bureau, from the Mayor's Office, and from other resources, and it had a huge effect. It really brought a sense of community there and brought people together, and kids had activities. They were busy. They had things to do.
Then last question for me today is, what do you need if it's on the rise? Is there anything that you need that you now don't have? You're in front of the city council. It's time to ask.
more police officers would be nice. I mean, you've heard that one before. But more police on the street. It's difficult hiring police officers, as you know right now, but I think that's a big thing.
The specialization of the gang enforcement team is critical because gang enforcement is so specialized. They've suffered some cutbacks, and it would be nice to see some of that restored and more funding for outreach services such as from the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. That's the preventative piece. I mean, we can do the enforcement side of it, and of course we need more people to do that, but The reality is we want to prevent it and intervene before we have to act as the police.
I'm also, going to ask about, follow up on the right light rail thing, but I was just struck by what you just said. I know that Project 57 has allowed us to put people 18 and over into a jail bed that otherwise we're getting a ticket. Mm-hmm. It strikes me that we might not have that same ability with people under 18. Is that?
Well, right now, TriMet, the Transit Police District Attorney, have been working with the juvenile court system. They're going to try to get 5 beds available for problem youth on the transit system. So they've identified 5, similar to the Project 57, we'd like Project 5.
Where would the beds be?
They'll be out at JDH.
At JDH?
Yeah, I don't have all the facts on this, but I was told that they're going to have 5 beds. And I actually saw an Oregonian, so it must be true.
Jim Mayer's smiling broadly back there.
Oh, I didn't say that. They're supposed to be the 5 beds set aside for chronic offenders on the MAC system,
really?
like the Project 57.
Do we have beds out there that are vacant that aren't open?
No, sir. I don't know for sure. This is all preliminary stuff that I've heard. I haven't been involved in the actual process itself. I was just told there's just 5 beds.
Okay.
Piggybacking on Project 57. Nice. Yes.
So, and then the comment about light rail was, I've seen the WAC and HUD officers in the cars, and I've seen police officers always in pairs at the light rail stations as late as 10 o'clock at night, which mm-hmm. is very reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
I have a daughter who often commutes out from my house to downtown and back, and I take her to the light rail station. And since all of this has happened in the last couple of months, it is really noticeably more safe feeling, and especially when you have a daughter.
Right.
So I appreciate that. But I remain concerned that as a person who uses the system a lot, over the noticeable lack of accountability for people who get on the light rail, as opposed to the bus. The bus right. is a whole different mm-hmm. social milieu, if you will. And the light rail, for a variety of reasons, because you don't see the driver, and for all of those reasons, people come on and they come off. And I am unconvinced that, and I'm curious about any of your responses to this, that the current kind of trust system of making sure you have a ticket is effective and actually contributes to some of the violence versus if we had a system on the light, and I realize this is a TriMet issue, but if we had on a light rail system like you see in every other city I've right. ever been to, turnstiles, and you know you have to have a ticket to get through the turnstile, or you drop coins in to get through the turnstile, just even something like that. Do you have an opinion
right.
on that?
Right, yeah, I do. I've been working 82nd Avenue MAX platform has been a real problem for us. I've been working a lot with TriMet, and Shelley Lomax, the security director, has looking at maybe some ideas of maybe stationing a agent at 82nd Avenue full-time to kind of a test. They've also talked about closing certain sections of the transit system, maybe having a turnstile type thing you're talking about. So they are looking at those. It's rather expensive and also kind of a cultural thing in Portland. When light rail came here, they wanted to be close to the community. The community could just walk on and go about. And I think things have changed since light rail came here, you know, many years ago. So they're looking at ways to improve that and to maybe close the system in some sections. Also, we're talking about possibly, there's some ideas here about maybe having a very visible, rather than having a sticker you have in your pocket or a ticket, maybe have something on your outer clothing. A lot of the monthly passes, they have like a ID and a lanyard. One of the concepts I was talking to Shelley Lomax about is having make a sticker. Maybe if you're going to ride the right rail, you have to have a sticker on your shoulder so when a police officer pulls up, they can see this sticker. I mean, it seems kind of silly, but...
But see, you guys are going to hassle me a lot because I keep mine right there.
But I'm saying if they required it to be on your outermost clothing, you'd also have peer pressure. If someone's standing without a sticker on the outside of their jacket or something like that, it might be some peer pressure. But those are the things we're looking at. It sounds kind of silly, but closing the system down costs a lot of money.
I don't like that idea.
You don't like that idea?
I don't like that idea.
Well, that's my best one for today. So the... that's what we're talking about. TriMet's looking for ways to improve the system. They know that the fare evasion is a problem, and people that evade the fares are oftentimes the ones that are creating the problem. So
I guess that's what I was asking. Do you agree that that's true?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You bet.
It's definitely a problem.
That was my sense.
Yeah. It's definitely a problem.
Thanks.
I'll say one more thing about gang enforcement, and I appreciate the support from Commander Ferraris, but gang enforcement teams around the country, the best way they do them is they have an investigative force, and then they have a